Welcome to Shattering Myths. This program is devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to know who is working against our interest, to understand how and why they are doing so, because exposing and condemning such schemes isn't hateful, it's caring. Today in our first hour, we would normally have IQ Al-Rasuli, but as I understand it, there is a connection between a faulty smoke alarm in the GCN studios and the telephone system. So it is impossible for anyone to call in. Well, I understand they can call in. The phone rings, but it cannot be answered and cannot be switched as to part of these shows. So we'll have to take a rain check from IQ unless that situation resolves itself. In our concluding hour, we are going to continue to review one of the most profound and important prophecies, that of Yeshayah 17 and 18, Isaiah 17 and 18, so that we might know how the world is going to devolve over these next 15 to 20 years. Our phone number, normally, if you'd like to participate in this program, being 877-376-45, love for folks to try to call in to see if, in fact, we can resolve the issue. The big news is sad news. Everything that we have been saying on this program, and I think apart from IQ Al-Rasuli, I think it is a lone voice crying out in the wilderness that the United States has pushed the acting government in the Ukraine to the point that we are on the precipice of world war. The news this morning is that Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has accused the West of wanting to seize the Ukraine amid escalating rhetoric between U.S. and Russia. That accusation, of course, is wholly grounded. The United States was caught in the midst of this in the telephone conversation between its ambassador to the Ukraine and the Undersecretary of State in Washington. The entire positioning and blustering of the Obama administration, of the State Department, of the CIA, and of NATO is specifically designed to seize the Ukraine, to move the Ukraine from a Warsaw Pact nation and from being part of Russia to being integrated into the West. Of course, it is a horrible calculation because even if successful, the Ukraine is a liability, not an asset. And beyond this, the consequence of this action has put us within earshot of global calamity. The Ukraine has launched military raids to regain buildings, which Mr. Lavrov has described as a bloody crime. As actually it was Mr. Putin that described them as a bloody crime, but what can you expect from journalists these days? The West, Lavrov says, wants to seize the Ukraine, being solely motivated by its own geopolitical ambitions and not the interest of the Ukrainian people. This was a comment that Lavrov made today on the AFP. Quote, the might of U.S. propaganda was aimed at smearing Russia, smearing those who protest against the illegal actions of the Kiev acting authorities. He went on to say, he is correct. I know that I represent a lone voice amongst millions that are positioning Putin as a former KGB agent that is trying to reestablish the USSR and America peacefully negotiating trying to be supportive of the Ukrainian people and their government to prevent it from being devoured by the bloodthirsty bear. But I'm here to tell you, all of that is sheer propaganda. The bloodthirsty, the finagling nation at this point is the United States. It caused this conflict. And the United States has used not just propaganda, but outright lies, slander, to position Putin as a foe worthy of war. For what? For what? I mean, surely the United States can't want war with Russia. Can't win that war. Well, before all the American patriots have a conniption fit. Yes, I understand that since America spends $1 trillion a year on its military and spy apparatus, that its military is vastly superior to the Russians, but that does not mean that it can win a war against Russia. We were vastly superior to the Iraqis. We were vastly superior to the Afghanis. We were vastly superior to the Vietnamese. We were vastly superior to the Koreans. We didn't win any of those wars. And each of them made America weaker. But Russia is no Korea. Russia is no Vietnam. Russia is neither Iraq nor Afghanistan. If America wants a war with Russia, if that is what all this maneuvering and propaganda is designed to achieve, that the egomaniacs that comprise the leadership of NATO, the U.S. military, and politicians and Washington, if what they want is war, it will destroy all of us. And yet that is where we are. In response to Lavrov's comments, Ukrainian Prime Minister, and let's be honest here, Ukraine does not have a prime minister. It has a acting government that has not been elected, that has no constitutional authority. So let's not put in big caps, as they do here in this article, Ukrainian Prime Minister Yatsenyuk. They don't have one. It's a junta that has been empowered by a violent protest in Kiev. He nonetheless said that if Russia wanted to start World War III by occupying Ukraine military and politically and by creating a conflict that would spread to the rest of Europe, so be it. Yes, the talking heads now are beginning to speak of World War III. It's not Russia that wants World War III. But it seems to be the intent of the United States to start World War III. Ukraine has warned that it will consider any crossing army into its territory a Russian invasion and will respond accordingly. It says, we will not accept false declarations about humanitarian action, a chief of staff of acting President Turchynov told the Interfax Ukraine news agency, quote, we will destroy the attackers. Russia, who has been marvelously disciplined at this point, recognizes that the ethnic Russians in Little Russia, eastern part of the country, that they spent most of their lives as Russian citizens. Anyone over the age of 40 has been a Russian far longer than they have been a Ukrainian. And the realization is that many are not just former Russian citizens. They are Russian ethnically. They speak Russian. All of their ties are to Russia. And yet this acting government in Kiev, and it's a junta, is now sending the Ukrainian military to end their protests. Pure hypocrisy in that it was through demonstrations, violent demonstrations, with kidnapping and murder and the looting and burning of buildings, that the protesters in Kiev took over the government. And now when ethnic Russians want to disassociate from the mob rule, the junta in Kiev, the acting government is sending their military after them. Russia has said, if you do that, we will intervene on behalf of Russians. And yet, what are they doing? And why are they doing it? It was yesterday that the Vice President of the United States in Kiev told them to do it. To, in essence, start what could well end up being a world war if the United States continues to escalate this. And yet, all the while, Barack Hussein Obama is blaming the Russians for being the provocateurs. When he sent his vice president to start the military action. And very soon, if they continue with their sanctions, now that the currency, Russian currency, debt is being viewed as junk status, another move that is imposed by the Obama administration because it has de facto control over the rating agency, something that was proven in news releases last year. If it continues to bloody and burden the Russians will have no choice. They will have nothing to lose. They will be, in fact, goaded into war. Can you imagine being, in this case, the mouse that roared? And if this is the mouse that roared, if the acting government of the Ukraine is the mouse that roared, that says that we will view the Russians not as humanitarians trying to protect their people, but instead as an invading military, and we will destroy the attackers. If it isn't the mouse that is roaring, then who is encouraging Ukraine to make such a foolish statement? Now, I've made clear that I recognize that spending $1 trillion on their military and spy apparatus, that the United States is superior militarily to the Russians. Well, the United States couldn't survive a war with the Russians because it would bankrupt the country right at its onset. And there'd be no benefit of going to war with the Russians because the United States couldn't occupy Russia or create a better scenario in Russia than what currently exists, as we found out in little Iraq. But beyond that, the Ukraine, which spent last year $5 billion on its military, two-thirds of which just went to salaries, much of it to people now that are on the opposing side, where almost all of the weapons manufacturing is done in the side loyal to the Russians, with a high Russian ethnic population, and in a country that has admitted that 80% of what it spent on its military was pure graft that was stolen by the people and the manufacturers of those weapon systems. They get down to $1 billion in spending that was useful against the Russians. And they're going to destroy the attackers? Are they absolutely out of their mind? You know, their first attempts to to just move into cities in the eastern Ukraine that were being controlled by ethnic Russians was thwarted. You know, little old ladies went out of the streets with barricades and said, you know, you're not coming in here. And they turned around and went back home. And now you going to take on, you're actually taunting the Russian military? This isn't the Ukraine that is speaking. This is the United States that is speaking. And when this continues to develop, who are you going to blame? As I shared earlier, in a separate development that isn't separate at all, because the United States has shown that it controls Standard & Poor. When Standard & Poor tried to devalue the U.S. Treasuries, the U.S. government brought suit against them that would have a suit that had Standard & Poor not capitulated and says, all right, we won't devalue the currency. Standard & Poor's would be out of business. They have been induced to say that Russians' currency ratings have been cut to one notch above junk status. You know, you continue to bludgeon a country as the United States is bludgeoning Russia by words and by finance and by true war preparations, and eventually you're going to get a war. You know, if you push anyone to a point where they have no other option but to lash out, if that is the last resort available to them, that's what they're going to do. The agency warned that further downgrades were possible if the West imposed additional sanctions against Moscow. Wow. This is really frightening, folks. But there is a silver lining in all of it, and that is that the destruction of Israel at the hands of the United States has been postponed. Kerry is way too interested in starting World War III with the Russians as opposed to allowing the Muslims to start World War III in Israel. I guess if there's going to be a World War III, America wants to be right in the midst of it, not on the sidelines of it. But that is our problem at the moment that has turned into one glimmer of hope. And that is that Kerry is no longer talking about Israel sacrificing its land to the Muslims for promises of peace. And as a result, rather than being in the limelight, Mahmoud Abbas of the PLO has decided that he would unify his PLO, his Fatah movement, with the Islamist group Hamas. And we will talk about the consequence of that when Shattering Myths continues in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So here's the news out of Israel. On Thursday, yesterday, the U.S.-sponsored peace talks with the so-called Palestinians, mythical people, were suspended. And they were suspended in response to President Mahmoud Abbas, who, by the way, was not elected. He lost the election by more than two-thirds. Hamas won the election by two-thirds. But the PLO couldn't handle the idea that they lost, and so Abbas set up his realm, the PLO's realm in the West Bank, where Hamas set up their rival administration in Gaza. And that's where we find ourselves. So when we talk about President Mahmoud Abbas, we're talking about a man that was not elected. He was soundly defeated. But now he is negotiating a unity pact with the rival Islamist group, Hamas. Now, there's a problem with that, and that's the reason why Netanyahu responded and said, well, we're not going to have ongoing discussions. Well, the PLO's charter has never been amended to allow Israel to survive. Fatah is a bit of a chameleon and will say or do anything that in the short term is expedient. Hamas is far too trustworthy for that. They continue to say what they are committed to doing, that Israel must be destroyed and that they exist to destroy Israel. And so to merge the two together puts the world in a position where there would be no one for Israel to negotiate with, because even anti-Semites recognize that Israel will never and should never be asked to give land, give control, give concessions to an avowed terrorist group that seeks its destruction. So this gave Netanyahu and Israel a way to opt out of the U.S.-sponsored peace talks without offending the United States. Of course, Obama, I'm sure, was still offended. The negotiations had appeared to be heading nowhere anyway because of the fact that Abbas had chosen use the United Nations to create a recognition of this mythical place known as Palestine to be viewed as an independent country apart from any peace negotiations. And so Netanyahu had already suspended the talks, but now he says it's over. Now, the Abbas claims that he was right in doing so because Israel only released about 80% of the terrorists that it had in its jails. Now, the reason that Israel didn't release the last 20% of them is because they were ruthless murderers. And this idea of releasing a ruthless murderer to have a discussion with an enemy that once you destroyed wasn't very popular in Israel, although it was really popular in the United States. So, with this most recent announcement, this designed merger between Hamas and the PLO, the reconciliation agreement as it's being caused, the peace accords, which were designed to be imposed on the 29th of this month, are dead. And thank goodness. You know, the United States was really in a dominant position. Having gone to European allies, and with the European allies, particularly with the United Kingdom, France, Italy, and Germany, getting them collectively to tell Israel that if you don't capitulate and surrender the West Bank to the Muslims, then we will impose not only sanctions on you, but you'll become the world's pariah as a nation. That's what Kerry was delivering. It put the Israelis in a lose-lose scenario. But fortunately, because of all of the attention now in the Ukraine, the United States has had to back off. And now, because the Muslims are no longer in the limelight, they have decided that they would unify. Now, if they unify, it'll be on Hamas's terms. They won 2/3 of the votes in the last election. It will be on Hamas's terms. Anyway, here's a quote from Hamas and the those involved in the negotiations for unification of Hamas and the PLO. It says the government of Israel will not hold a negotiation. Oh, I'm sorry. This is from, I've got one of those coming up. This one is actually from Israel. It says the government of Israel will not hold negotiations with a Palestinian government that is backed by Hamas, a terror organization that calls for Israel's destruction. That was the official statement of Israel. Earlier in Washington, a U.S. official said the United States would have to reconsider its assistance to Abbas, which, and they even say here in this article, the aid-dependent Palestinian Authority. In other words, the back before Yasser Arafat, demanded that Muslims in Israel no longer work for a living, where they were the most prosperous Muslims in the world, and told them that they should go and kill Jews instead of working with them. Now the Palestinian Authority is completely aid-dependent. You know, if you drive through the streets of areas controlled by the Palestinian Authority, all of the stores are shuttered. No one is working. Men, you know, are sitting there playing with their AK-47s. Boys are playing war games in the streets. But no one is working. The Western-backed leader of the biblical people known as the Palestinians, of course, is a boss. But the West knows that should they form a government in cooperation with Hamas, it will be Hamas that will control that government. The Palestinian deal envisions a unity government, within 5 weeks, and national elections 6 months later. The Palestinian divisions widened after Hamas won the last general ballot in 2006, just as I had told you. Seized the Gaza Strip from forces loyal to Abbas in 2007. So, with everything we've witnessed throughout the Arab Springs and the votes that have taken place as a result of the so-called Arab Spring, is that the most fundamentalist Islamic candidates have won every election. And that's exactly what we should expect on this election, which means that Hamas will be in control of the so-called Palestinians. Wasil Abul Youssef, a top Palestinian Liberation Organization official. Now, the PLO is Fatah. The PLO is the Palestinian Authority. They are inseparable. I mean, literally the same organization. So when you hear a quote from Wasil Abul Youssef and representing the PLO, he is also representing Fatah, which is the political party of the PLO terrorist organization, and he's representing the Palestinian Authority, which is the government arm of Fatah. They are one and the same. He said he rejected what he called Israeli and American threats and said a Palestinian unity government would be comprised of technocrats. So he's saying, you know, the threat of America to withhold aid, that would be money, and Israel's threat that says, you can do whatever you want, but don't expect us to negotiate with you if you're going to be controlled by Hamas. And Hamas, which is controlled by Islamic clerics, Wasil Abul Youssef says, no, don't worry about the ideology of Hamas. We're not going to elect terrorists or Islamic theologians. No, we'll run and elect technocrats. They'll just be, you know, civil servants like everybody else. And you can continue to give us money, and you can continue to give us land. Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu told the BBC's Middle East editor, Jeremy Bowen, and it's kind of interesting here, that, you know, that the Palestinians are all given titles like prime minister and president, but Benjamin Netanyahu is just Mr. Netanyahu. He told the BBC's Middle East editor, Jamie Bowen, that Abbas could have peace with Israel or a pact with Hamas, but they can't have both. Well, of course they can't, because Hamas is at war with Israel. He said Israel would only resume talks with the so-called Palestinians when they decide to abandon the course of terror. As long as I'm prime minister of Israel, I will never negotiate with a Palestinian government that is backed by Hamas terrorists that are calling for our liquidation, he said. Now, that would seem like a pretty reasonable statement, wouldn't it? However, President Obama lamented that neither side had the political will to make tough decisions and that there would need to be a pause in the process. Now, why not just say, you know, Israel's right. I hate to admit it, but Israel's right. We can't, impose our will on Israel and force them to negotiate with a terrorist organization that is calling for their liquidation. That's really not reasonable. But he couldn't. No, not this disgusting reprobate of a man. He just said folks can posture, folks can cling to maximalist positions, but realistically, there is one door, and that is the two parties getting together and making some very difficult political compromises in order to secure the future of both Israelis and Palestinians for future generations, President Barack Hussein Obama said. Do I expect that they will walk through that door next week, next month, or even in the course of the next 6 months? No. Well, at least we have a postponement for 6 months. Of course, we will need that postponement for another 14 years, because that is the timing when Israel will be compelled by the United States to capitulate and surrender land to the Muslims. But can you imagine the arrogance, the immorality of this president? We know that in the 18th chapter of Yeshayah Isaiah, Yahweh condemns the rhetoric of the United States, saying that we talk down to others, that our rhetoric is not only condescending, not only arrogant, but that it is irrational, and that we as a nation very seldom consider the consequences of our words or of our actions, and that we as a nation are constantly trying to take land away from those to whom it belongs. But when you read and listen to President Barack Hussein Obama's comments regarding Israel from the perspective of Yahweh, every word that he says appears as if Obama has read the prophecy and says, you know, I'm going to go along. I'm going to be that jerk. I'm going to be that immoral buffoon that God was besmirching. I mean, think for a moment about what the President of the United States said. He's saying that it is inappropriate, that it is irrational, that it is misguided for Israel to unrealistically cling to the position that it should not make political compromises with a terrorist organization that wants to destroy it. Now, you tell me, what kind of a compromise could you make with a terrorist organization, Hamas, whose sole purpose is to destroy you, that is going to make life better? If you give them land, would they not set up rockets on that land? Oh, we've tried that. That was Gaza. If you give them more autonomy, wouldn't they just import more weapons? Yes, that's exactly what they'll do. You'd have to be a complete ignoramus or pure evil to make a statement like what the President of the United States said while he was in Korea this morning. You're either pure evil or you're a complete ignoramus. One of the two. Because there is no way to justify telling a nation that they must make concessions and compromise with people who have demonstrated for decades that they wish to terrorize them and destroy them. So what does it say about the United States? For those of you who are still patriotic, for those of you who say you need to respect the office of the president, for those of you who pledge allegiance to the flag, what does it say about you now that you know the truth about your country? How long are you going to cling to the myths that America represents something that is good? I shared briefly some of the story about the movie. It's a 7-minute film that is called The Rise of Al-Qaeda. It is in the National September 11th Memorial Museum. The 7-minute film has been shown to several groups, including an interfaith advisory group of clergy members. Now, so these are all scums. You know, it's the only thing that I think rivals politicians in terms of immorality today would be clerics. I'm sure God would agree. Those on the panel overwhelmingly took strong objection to the film, believing that some of the terminology in it casts aspersions on all Muslims, and requested changes, but the museums declined. In March, the sole imam in the group resigned to make clear that he would never endorse its comments or contents. Now, here's a quote. The screening of this film in its present state would greatly offend our local Muslim believers, as well as any foreign Muslim visitor to the museum. Sheikh Mustafa Elsbani, the imam of the Mosque of Manhattan, wrote in a letter to the museum's director. Unsophisticated visitors who do not understand the difference between Al-Qaeda and Muslims may come away with a prejudiced view of Islam, leading to antagonism and even to confrontation towards Muslim believers near the site, end quote. But there is no distinction between Al-Qaeda and Islam. Al-Qaeda is simply one of thousands of accurate manifestations of Islam. The Al-Qaeda terrorist organization were good Muslims, doing what the Quran orders good Muslims to do. They were following the example of Muhammad,